Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Nina.
How are you?
I'm great because we're going to talk about Christmas.
Yes, actually, we're going to talk about Christmas movies to keep it within the cultural scope of this podcast. But we have been preparing to talk about Christmas movies. And what have we discovered?
So before we do that, can I just get you to do one thing?
Mm-hmm.
Just... You have to remember, I love Christmas, so you have to bear with me. If you go to the Soleri homepage, can you go to the Soleri homepage?
Yes.
And if you look at the What's New section, and you'll see something called For Christmas Time, the Bird of Dawning Singeth All Night Long. And you click on that, and I just want you to play that. This is my favorite quote from Shakespeare about Christmas.
So shall I play it?
Yes!
Some say that if against that season comes wherein our Savior's birth is celebrated, this bird of dawning singeth all night long. And then they say, no spirit dare stir abroad. The nights are wholesome then, no planets strike, no fairy takes, nor witch hath power to charm. So hallowed and so gracious is the time.
And that, boys and girls, was William Shakespeare from Act One, Scene One of Hamlet.
So that's my prayer for you, that this will be a hallowed and gracious time.
Amen. Yes to everybody. May it be a better Christmas than what we're fearing. And also, I'm also saying that there is a painting of the Da Vinci's Saint Anne and Saint Mary with Christ and a lamb, a beautiful painting.
Isn't that beautiful?
That is at the Louvre, and that we actually talked about when we went to the Louvre to look at the Da Vinci exhibition. It's a very famous painting, and that serves as an illustration to this incredibly beautiful recording of Shakespeare's lines. So that is our putting ourselves in a Christmas mood.
Uh-huh.
And the reason we're doing this podcast is because obviously the tradition in a lot of households is that people watch some kind of Christmas movie. It's just to stay in the spirit and the mood, even if you don't celebrate a very elaborate Christmas, and even if you don't celebrate Christmas at all. But when we started looking at the movies we could talk about, we have discovered something strange, and I will leave it to you to say what we have discovered.
Well, I would be embarrassed if I had to admit how much time I've spent searching for good Christmas movies. You know, because we have Christmas movies all month long on the Soleri Report, so I'm always on the hunt for new ones. In the process, I watched Fat Man, Mel Gibson's new Christmas movie, and it's so bad. I think the first week's gross was $100,000. It's truly dreadful. Anyway, but what I discovered is that there are a remarkable number of Christmas movies that are what I would describe as simply dreadful. And sort of my review of all of them says that it looks like what Hollywood thinks every woman wants is to be a princess, or, you know, have a handsome stranger come along and save her from the toils of this world. So, I don't know. I went and looked at the highest grossing Christmas films, and it's clear that I have no talent for... I could never make money at Christmas movies.
Well, if you allow me, let me just parse you this from the industry standpoint, because the best movies or the most popular movies list is kind of slightly misleading. So what used to happen in the industry is not necessarily what is happening this year. So let's just leave this year alone, because this year is the most unusual year in the history of the film industry because of the lockdowns and inability of the theater chains to release movies, but also inability of the production companies and film studios to produce movies. And now they obviously have also a backlog of movies that have not been released. So the 2020 has to kind of be standing apart in terms of, you know, what movies are going to be successful and not successful. I talked about it a little bit on the occasion of the release of Christopher Nolan's Tenet that actually came out as a theatrical release in other countries than the United States. And it did quite well in countries where cinemas were operating. And it didn't do very well in the United States because it couldn't. It basically wasn't released widely. So 2020 for Christmas movies or any kind of movies should probably stand apart. Therefore, I'm going to be talking a little bit about historical situation in the marketplace. So before, the idea for decades was that obviously families would have the family break, you know, there would be vacation at school, people would take some time off work. And traditionally, for example, just after the Christmas day, there would be a few days where the family would go together and watch some movies, not necessarily Christmas related, meaning something that would talk about Christmas trees or Christmas tales. It would be just blockbusters that would be released, movies that would be probably family comedies or great action films. And that was a very kind of financially attractive for corridor for studios to release films. The tradition also would be that the studios would usually have on their slate some kind of either an animated film for, let's say, an adaptation of Nutcracker or The Christmas Tale for children, and then they would have something else for the adults. So that's the reason there's such an enormous amount of movies that are so-called Christmas films, because each year several companies, several studios would release movies that would relate to that. But as you have just rightly pointed out, the majority of them, even if they made money at the time, because people would just be caught into the spirit of Christmas and go and see whatever was in the cinema because that was the tradition, they were not necessarily fantastic films. And now that when we look at them 10, 15, or even 20 years later, a lot of them are absolutely dreadful. So we have decided that we are going to still call out four or five interesting good movies that we think that have withstood the test of time. And we're going to completely ignore the movies that we will not even name because they are so uninspiring, both for children and adults. I'm sure that they live quite well on, you know, various streaming services as a fare for children, especially the animated ones. But the idea of actually rewatching them is pretty abhorrent, so we are not going to do that. So this is kind of...
Well, the ones we picked are wonderful. They're absolutely wonderful.
Okay, your first movie then.
Yeah.
Without much ado.
Oh, my first movie we just had on Let's Go to the Movies. It's absolutely marvelous. Darlene put me onto it. It's a BBC movie about Charles Dickens writing A Christmas Carol. So it's not A Christmas Carol, which is going to be my second movie. It's the story of Charles Dickens writing A Christmas Carol. And it's absolutely charming. And it inspired me to go back and sort of remember and read the story of Charles Dickens, who was a remarkable and amazing man, a wonderful man.
The film is called The Man Who Invented Christmas, right?
The Man Who Invented Christmas. And it's fun. It's so much fun. It's about the, you know, sort of the messy organicness of inventing something, of creating something, because he's struggling to create and he's under lots of pressure for deadlines and to make it by Christmas. And, you know, he's got to make money. He's got to make all the different parts come together. It's fabulous. You know, if you've ever published anything, you can definitely relate.
Actually, let me say something kind of that relates to it. I'm probably the last generation that remembers that because I have actually been doing that when I was young. When you worked at a, let's say, weekly or daily newspaper, you were actually sometimes writing a novel in installments. At least that's what happened in the 19th century and well into the 20th.
Right.
And therefore, you were on a deadline to produce next chapter, so to be printed in the newspaper. The readers were waiting for it.
Right.
Dickens was one of those writers. There were several. Mark Twain was another one.
And very popular. Very, very popular. Right.
Right. Who had to actually literally write something for printing the next day or a couple of days later. So he had a tremendous pressure to produce what we now read as his entire novels in chapters, but they were actually installments that had very stringent deadlines. That is, you know, talk of pressure, you know, that's enormous pressure for a writer.
Uh-huh.
So what did you like about this film and how would you recommend it?
What I loved was watching the creative process and how he brings it together and then turns it into a story which draws deeply from his coming out of poverty as a child and the struggles he had with poverty. And he turns it into a story that invites the Scrooges of this world to care about the general population and the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so he comes up with a story that's a win-win for the poor and the rich alike. It's sort of the miracle that people start to care about each other again. And that's the miracle of Christmas. And, you know, it's remarkable how he takes this horrible suffering that he experienced it and turns it into a spirit of warmth and generosity. And it's quite clever because he, you know, it isn't, in one sense, it's not sentimental. He explores all the points of view and their frustration and anger before he sort of reconciles the tensions. And it's very interesting. The movie ends, and I haven't checked to make sure it's true. I'm assuming it is if they put this out. Apparently, after he published it, it was a huge success in terms of popularity, not in terms of financial, you know, he was looking to sort of meet his overhead, and he didn't quite make it. But apparently, philanthropy just skyrocketed after the book came out. It had a dramatic impact on people's willingness to give.
Well, because he created such an enduring tale, and, well, morality tale, but in a very positive sense of the word, meaning kind of a mirror to people who had means to show them that sometimes sharing is much more gratifying than not sharing. And also there was this kind of deeply, presumably, religious admonishment that if you do not show the spirit of generosity, there are horrible things waiting for you after you die.
The ghosts are going to show up.
The ghosts are going to show up, indeed. So the kids would be scared, the adults would be chastened, if you like.
Uh-huh.
And the tale is extremely enduring, which is, I think, why you chose this as your second choice, one of the adaptations of Christmas Carol. And I think we need to talk about the fact that there are several and what they are. But you, I think, chose the best one. So which one is it?
So before I mention that one, I just do want to say it's a wonderful thing to go back and read the story of Dickens, because it shows you that someone can, it's almost like a Victorian Leonardo da Vinci. Someone can come up from, you know, a very difficult place economically and really educate themselves and make a fantastic contribution and do so with a generous heart. So I really think that Dickens' life story is something that can inspire us at a time when there's way too much meanness in the world. So A Christmas Carol. Now, here's what's interesting. A Christmas Carol has been made into approximately 10 films and then approximately 10 films for TV.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, you know, one of the, I can just see somebody in Hollywood looking at the list of the top grossing films and what the opportunities were and say, let's just do A Christmas Carol again.
And they do, I assure you. I worked on one, so.
And they do. But this one, I do think, I haven't watched all 20, but this one is George C. Scott, who I think is just a remarkable actor. I love George C. Scott. I'm a big fan of many of the movies he's done, but he's just a remarkable actor, and he plays Scrooge, and he plays Scrooge brilliantly. And it's the 84 version, A Christmas Carol. I think, I dare say everybody listening knows the story, but it's played really wonderfully, and the conversion of the book into the script is very, very well done. And the acting is really marvelous. It's surprising, though, because I'm assuming it was a British production and that they chose an American actor, and it's a testament to Scott's acting ability that they did.
Right. I mean, later versions usually are the American version. But, you know, there are versions, as you say. You know, there are BBC versions, there are Hollywood versions. The sad thing is that I think I read in March that the Dickens Museum that is in London, I think, had to close because of, you know, the closures and lack of tourists.
Mm.
And I don't think they reopened. I don't know if it will ever reopen because it was relying on ticket sales, which obviously were not coming through.
Oh, how horrible.
But maybe it will get revived once everything else gets revived in London. That is too...
Now, the 84 Scott version was made for TV. It was not a, you know, a Hollywood release film. It was made for TV.
Right. But obviously, we are now living in the world where whatever...
Everything streams.
...medium a film was made, everything is streaming. So I think that distinction has disappeared to a great extent.
Yeah.
But that is the recommendation we have for, if you want to see A Christmas Carol, this is the version to probably see. I mean, there are others that are
right, and
interesting, but this one is a very good one.
I would watch The Man Who Invented Christmas first.
Right.
Because I think there's something about seeing, you know, remembering the story of Dickens and seeing his process of writing this and what it did, and then you watch the film itself, and I don't know, to me it's fascinating to watch the two of them back to back.
Right, so you have just created a double bill on streaming. Bravo.
Well, but the other thing is, I really think, given what's going on this year in 2020,
mm-hmm.
now is the time to dream up Scrooge having a change of heart.
Well, there's a reason why this is a tale for children. But I'll stop at that in terms of comments. But it is definitely probably a wonderful combo that you came up with. You know, look at the creator first, and then the look at what a beautiful thing he has created that has such an enduring power. I mean, the 10 adaptations and, you know, 100 years is a perfect testament to...
It's incredible.
...to the material that is just keeps on giving. You know, speaking of Christmas, we're talking about movies, but we're speaking of Christmas theme. It's like Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker that is basically the most enduring ballet ever, because it gives the children who study ballet an opportunity to appear on stage. And it gives the families the opportunity to adore their children on stage. But it would not be possible.
And it's fantastic. It's beautiful. I mean, one of the things...
But as I'm saying, it would not be possible if not for the music, the quality of the music. That's why it's enduring and has been enduring for 100 years. Sorry, what were you saying?
So I tried to watch several movies on the Nutcracker.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the Nutcracker perform several times. And it's so magnificent that I just can't relate to it in a movie form. And, you know, if it wasn't for the inability for people to go to the ballet in most places now, I would encourage everyone to see the Nutcracker. Certainly if they're children, if you have children or grandchildren, children that you love, as soon as you can take them to see the Nutcracker at Christmas, it's a, you know, it's magical. It's a must do.
Oh, absolutely. And also some of them have, you know, relationship because their children are in it very often in
mm-hmm.
various local productions. But even if you don't, if you just take children at any age, they love it. So that is another example of a Christmas tale that is absolutely enduring because it's so perfect and so beautifully put together. So we have just done the classics. I think there's another classic that you want to talk about.
Yes.
That was remade, and the problem, obviously, is that no matter how we love the original ones, movies do have to be remade because the technology changes so much.
So
within decades that if you don't do that, then the movie just feels extremely old, even if it's brilliant. So what movie?
So I adore The Miracle on 34th Street, of course, having lived in New York for 11 years and loved it when I lived. And it was a very different place than it is now. You know, New York is really, as we watch, being destroyed. So this was a sort of sentimental return. The original one with Maureen O'Hara is pretty old, and there was a remake done in 1994 that, in fact, is quite well done. A lot of times I do still like the old classics, but this one was quite sort of cleverly modernized and well done, and it does really, it just takes you back and makes you want to celebrate all that you loved about New York and that world. You know, the world is gone now. And it was funny, it was pushed out by greed money, which is definitely a theme in this version of Miracle on 34th Street. You have the disaster capitalists and the dirty tricks. You have New York versions of the Beck brothers. In that sense, it's modernized to include plenty of organized crime and dirty tactics. But it's just a very, very charming and wonderful movie. And it has some important morality messages in it, too.
Actually, when we were talking about that, something occurred to me. It wasn't on the original list that we were talking about, but if we're talking about New York, the Christmas spirit, and the giving and the poverty and the haves and the have-not, there is a perfect movie that is charming and still extremely vivid, and that's the movie called Trading Places.
Yes.
Which is probably the best movie.
Well, you know, that's one of my favorite movies ever, ever.
Absolutely,
ever.
Me too. It's probably the best movie that Eddie Murphy has ever done. And
yeah. Well, you know, Aaron Rousseau produced that movie. He was a friend of mine. And it's so his spirit, right?
Sorry, can you repeat the name?
Aaron Rousseau.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Hold on, let me look it up. I'm sure it was Aaron's movie.
No, I'm pretty sure you're right.
Yeah. But Aaron had that kind of wonderful, generous, giving spirit. He was just such a big, you know, he was lion-hearted is the only way I can describe it. And it has that incredible joie de vivre that he had. So the movie, every time I see it, and I've seen it many times, it truly reminds me.
Yeah.
Of
this is definitely the movie that I would recommend watching at Christmas time, because it does talk about, don't assume that everybody who is poor is worthless, and don't assume that everybody who is not is fantastic.
Right. And
which is a good comedic way, obviously, to treat the subject, but it is very true. And it has just priceless scene after scene, including the gorilla and on the train.
Well, you've got Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy.
Correct.
And then you've got, who played?
Jamie Lee Curtis.
You've got Ralph Bellamy and Don Ameche playing the Duke brothers. The Duke brothers are the Philadelphia aristocrats who are the Scrooge of this story. And instead of their heart being warm, they get their head handed to them. It's pretty funny. Anyway.
Yes, they're extremely callous and heartless. And then it turns out that the young protagonists in the film are the most charming people ever. This is definitely a Christmas picture that I completely forgot that is also happening in New York. And at least...
No, it happens in Philadelphia, and then they go to New... It's Philadelphia the whole time, but then they go to New York to the World Trade Center to trade the commodities market.
Ah, that's what happens, yeah.
Right.
Because I remember the train and then going... Yeah, exactly, you're right. So... Comedy, we just went to comedy that we even forgot about it. And I wanted to mention a movie that is not a movie, it's a TV series that we actually talked about last week, but I want to bring it back again. This is Downton Abbey.
Because it's so perfect for Christmas. Oh, so perfect for Christmas.
The television shows on both sides of the ocean, meaning both in Britain and in the United States, have always had the tradition in many shows of having a Christmas special episode that would either feature something Christmas-related or at least be a double bill to be longer. And Downton Abbey maintains this tradition, and they have fantastic Christmas special editions in various seasons. One of them is particularly moving. This is happening during the First World War. Nobody knows what happened to the young heir to Downton Abbey's family, because he's on the front as an officer together with one of the servants on the estate. They both have been lost behind the enemy lines, behind the German front line. The family is gathered together with servants and friends and guests and everybody at celebrating Christmas. They are singing songs, and then in walks young Matthew and the soldier. They both have been saved, and all is well, at least on the Christmas Eve. Soon after, things will go wrong, probably, but on that one night, everything is right. Everybody is reunited, and it's an extremely warming episode.
It's beautiful.
I think it's your favorite one, too, right?
Oh, for Christmas, there is nothing better than watching Downton Abbey, particularly the Christmas episodes. And I think, if I remember correctly, they used to release the next series right around Christmas and the holidays. So if you wanted to binge watch it, you could.
Yeah, that was the idea, yes.
Yeah, and it's beautiful because the home is all decorated. You know, whoever did the Christmas decorations on the Downton Abbey home were, it was incredible, and they're the big Christmas trees. So it was, in terms of style, it's sort of the Christmas decoration in the Christmas home with family that everybody dreams of. So, yeah.
Yeah, of course, it's a fantasy. I mean, we don't have that kind of homes, that kind of trees, and that kind of, you know, servants.
Well, but we're willing. We're willing. We're willing to have them. We're willing.
But we're willing, yes. Yeah, it would be lovely to have that. I mean, it's a total eye candy, as you say, and it's a total fantasy. But for Christmas viewing, it's celebration of the world past, because obviously this is talking about the first quarter of the 20th century, and everything has changed tremendously in England and anywhere in the world since and during that time. So this is obviously a nostalgia piece, but it's a beautifully done nostalgia piece, and it's a tradition.
Right, and it's all about, you know, Christmas is always about families and the different positive and negatives and the tensions of families. And, you know, you're constantly seeing the building and tearing apart of the family. So I just think the family theme is also very appropriate for the holidays.
Yes, and it's beautifully illustrated. So that is our recommendation as well. And then if we stay in the theme of Great Britain, I love a movie that probably millions of people love too, and it's nothing new.
I adore this movie. This movie is fantastic.
Right. It's probably not only my favorite or your favorite, and it's the movie called Love Actually that we probably have all seen, or if somebody has not seen it, they should probably. It's a comedy by Richard Curtis that is divided into several stories. It's kind of like a compilation that stars some of the most famous British actors. The cast includes Emma Thompson.
The cast is amazing.
Alan Rickman, Hugh Grant.
Colin Firth. Bill
Nye. I mean, yes. I mean, everybody you can think of.
So my favorite, I love Bill Nye. Bill Nye, there's no actor in the world I love more than Bill Nye. And he is unbelievable in this. He's unbelievable. You know, I'm kind of amazed he took the role, but he's just unbelievable.
Right. Do you want to say a little bit more for people who haven't seen it?
They have to see it. He plays an over-the-hill rock star who is resuscitated with his Christmas hit. And he and his manager spend December trying to promote this hit. And he's completely over-the-top outrageous. And it's hysterical.
It is hysterical, yes. Millay is a has-been kind of combination of, you know, I don't know, Keith Richards or someone. It's absolutely priceless.
Yeah, right. He's very Keith Richards.
My favorite is the story in which Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman are married. He is a boss of a company where he has a secretary who happens to be, has caught his eye. And The wife makes him go to, I think it's Debenhams or one of the big department stores on Oxford Street in London. And they are shopping for Christmas presents. And he stops by the counter that sells jewelry, trying to secretly buy a necklace, a present for his mistress. And he's being served by Rowan Atkinson, who is playing his most wild persona of a smarmy sales assistant. Nobody can do it better than he can.
Right.
So while Alan Rickman is trying desperately to hurry up the salesman to do this purchase secretly before his wife comes back and catches him at it, while she's somewhere roaming in the department store, the salesman is celebrating the gift wrapping, the presenting, the paying. The whole thing takes forever. So Alan Rickman is the person who is basically sweating bullets, trying not to get caught. One of the best comedy routines that I have ever seen in cinema.
Right. There's so many vignettes in this thing. There's so many scenes that are just unbelievably memorable. That's why.
Well, the most memorable is Hugh Grant dancing on the steps of 10 Downing Street. Right. That is probably the most famous scene in right. the world. And no other Prime Minister of England has kind of rivaled Hugh Grant as Prime Minister of England. He's just absolutely priceless. We would have probably accepted him. Well, the Brits maybe probably would have accepted him if he was actually running it. He's priceless in it.
Right. Yeah.
So we have actually chosen the light and memorable and enduring movies that happened to have Christmas as a device to show some heartwarming tales, but not the kind of crass action films that have something Christmassy, like, I don't know, the Rudolph the Reindeer or Dr. Seuss in him.
So I will make a confession.
Mm.
You know, I thought, okay, I have an obligation to understand the American culture. So I have to watch some of these movies. So I looked at them and I thought, which could I watch? And I said, okay, I'll watch Home Alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never recommend it as a movie, but I have to tell you, the scenes where he's besting the robbers, so say there are about 10 scenes where he clobbers the robbers, I laughed my head off. So I can understand why people watch it, because there are maybe 10 scenes where I was laughing hard enough to cry. It was pretty funny.
Well, but you have chosen the kind of absolute, A-title masterpiece, you know, a movie that is studied at film schools, how to make a very good comedy.
Really?
Well, so it's probably not a very good example, what I'm thinking about.
The other reason it's not example, I love Joe Pesci. I think Joe Pesci is fantastic. He's an amazing actor. There's so many Joe Pesci scenes that I can point to that I just remember that are classic. So part of it is he's the alpha male robber, and he does an absolutely fantastic acting job.
Yeah, he's extremely talented. We know him better from something like Goodfellas or something. Yes.
Right.
But that's what I'm kind of leading to, that you and I have just chosen the movies that are kind of enduring and heartwarming and bring a lot in terms of both storytelling and the enduring values that they promote in viewers, old and young. The problem is, that's what you called out at the beginning, is that right. The majority of films, if you look at the list that you have pointed to, you know, on Wikipedia, if you look at the list of the most highest grossing Christmas films, the majority of them are not even very good comedies like Home Alone, but, you know, the movies that are, to me, they are slightly soulless, meaning they are aimed at children. They are very often animated. There's a lot of action happening there. But at the end of this, they have neither promoted any good values in children, like, you know, I don't know, share with others or be kind to others, so-called Christmas spirit, or neither they are particularly entertaining if you're older than 5 years old. And that's what is sad, that the majority of the films that have actually been embraced by the audiences because they're highest grossing are just kind of mindless, either animation or comedies, but kind of very soulless and mindless productions, not the ones that have any enduring power from the point of view of morality or...
Well, you know, that was one of the reasons I wanted to highlight Shakespeare and Dickens this season, because Shakespeare and Dickens, no authors were more popular in their time. You know, I mean, people would line up with their pennies to get the latest installment from Dickens. You know, when he'd go to a reading, it would be packed. Same with Shakespeare's plays. So it's a reminder that you can have the greatest artist, you know, sort of artistry in the world, and it can be wildly popular. That's always the best stuff.
Yes, but I have a caveat here, because by now, both Dickens and Shakespeare have moved from kind of popular culture to the highbrow culture that is much less accessible to most of the people, especially the young people. There's no way you're going to incite a typical 15-year-old to either read Dickens or Shakespeare, unless it's kind of modernized and translated into something that is acceptable. You know, it has been done successfully with Shakespeare when they have done adaptations in movies with very young actors who were popular, you know, the Leonardo DiCaprio's, Julia Stiles, and so on.
I just have to...
Because that was the only way to bring them around to Shakespeare, right?
I have to tell you, one time I called a client, it was about 10 years ago, and they were very down. And I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I'm really worried about my family." I said, "Why?" He said, "My daughter's reading Moby Dick in school. She was in high school." Mm-hmm. So last night I asked her what she thought of it. She finally finished it. She said, "It was a book about a fish with no sex."
You know, what is Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea? You know, it's a guy who's trying to catch a fish and fails for most of the book. You can reduce... I saw a meme somewhere about a book that is about some height-challenged village people who are looking for the lost jewelry. That's Lord of the Rings.
Oh, no.
So you can reduce any, especially at school, you can reduce any novel to something like that. And I don't blame them, because some of those novels that are classics, you know, you just think, like, for crying out loud, you know, why was it so venerated? It's really... bad novel. But all I'm just saying is that as much as you and I and a lot of our listeners love so-called highbrow culture, culture with a capital C, and we're damn determined at Food for the Soul to promote that kind of paintings and that kind of literature and art, there should be also a middle ground and an ability to update for every new generation.
Right. Absolutely.
Some classical themes and classical tales so that it would be accessible to them, because technology changes. You know, like a perfect example, you like the remake of Miracle on the 34th Street from 1994. The difference between this one and the original one is, of course, that this is in color to start with.
Right.
You show me a teenager who's going to watch a black and white movie made in 1930s. I mean, for crying out loud, it's not possible. So there is a method to this madness of updating the classic tales. But the problem is that I don't see that many new ones, which is why I love Trading Places, because it was obviously Prince and the Pauper. You know, that's the original material there.
Right.
But it was beautifully updated and made into a contemporary comedy. And I love Actually, because even though it has certain themes...
It's very modern.
It is extremely modern. It happens in contemporary England, and the couples that are presented there are modern people with their modern problems. And there is a dearth of that kind of films or television shows. And that's what we're kind of deploring. And that's why we're directing everybody to see the oldies and goodies, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So we have, again, wasted a perfectly good... hour or even less this time of everybody's time recommending those movies. Maybe I should repeat them again so that everybody would know.
Yeah, definitely.
So the first one was The Man Who Invented Christmas. This is a British movie biography of Charles Dickens. The second one is Christmas Carol, the version with George C. Scott. Then we are recommending remake of The Miracle on the 34th Street from 1994. And what were the last two?
Downton Abbey Christmas Specials.
Uh-huh.
And Love Actually. And we mentioned Trading Places.
Right. So these are not movies that are known to listeners for sure. But on the other hand, you know how it is. You completely forget about some movie and then someone mentions that and they say, oh yeah, I have to see that again. So that's what we are recommending.
Well, and if you haven't seen these, what a fabulous Christmas selection.
Exactly.
I mean, if you have not seen these movies, you're going to have a great Christmas.
Which is what we are wishing our Food for the Soul community and our Solari community from Catherine and Nina, right?
From our house to your house, have a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous and happy New Year.
Watching movies, enjoying people's company, and finally traveling, which is my little wish for Christmas. That's all I want for Christmas, is ability to travel. This is probably the end of the year, and we are hoping to bring you more.
I mean, here's what's interesting. We had in January, we had planned a magnificent year. If you look at all the different, you know, you were going to London, you were going to Krakow, you're going to Vienna, you're going to Rome, you're going to San Francisco, New York, Philadelphia. I mean, we had quite a year.
And let's...
And where?
Let's not forget this Solari hang that was supposed to take place at the Lake Constance.
Oh, yeah, Lake Constance for the opera. So if you look at your plans as of January, because you spent a lot of January making all those travel arrangements, your year was going to be incredible. And the exhibits you were going to see, the music you were going to hear, and then kibosh. And this was what was so painful. For some reason, you and I decided it would be really the responsible thing to make all the arrangements for the whole year in January. You know, kind of lock them all in, which meant they all had to be unraveled. I have no idea how much time of yours it took to unravel them, but you were a great sport about it. And then if you look at everything you've written and done for Food for the Soul, it's been incredible. And not one whine about, you know, because if you look at what you, you know, I was going to participate in some of it, but if you look at what we missed, it was, I mean, it was going to be one of the most, from an art and music standpoint, it's going to be one of the most remarkable years of our lives.
You know what is a definition of life? Life?
Life is what happens when you're making other plans.
Exactly. Thank you.
Well, Food for the Soul has been magnificent this year. You didn't miss a beat, and it just goes to show, you know, we have to rock and roll in this world.
Well, we're just going to, in this little corner of Food for the Soul, we're just going to stay looking at art and movies and while everything else is passing us by because there's nothing else. Yeah, you have to be a little bit philosophical about it, you know, as long as...
Yeah, so let me ask you one question before we close, and that is... So many of the movies that were going to be released this year were not released.
Mm-hmm.
I know because when you and I talked about the Solari movie of the year, and I always get your advice because you're, you know, for the Academy, you're in the middle of watching hundreds of movies. And so is it possible they're all going to get released next year and we're going to have a flood?
Well, there are interesting things happening in the industry because Warner Brothers, for example, has announced that some of their big titles of 2021, including the Dune that you and I are waiting for,
right,
are going to be released simultaneously on HBO Max, which is the streaming service, but obviously not everybody has that, and in theaters. This is obviously having various repercussions for the theater business, not very good ones. And also this has been an announcement, but practically, you know, the cinemas are closed all over the world and will be for several months. By spring or early summer, when usually the blockbusters are released, the situation will definitely change all over the world. So this is an announcement that is having repercussions, but nobody knows how it's going to play out. So
right.
Obviously, studios are trying to figure out how to release the backlog that they have of major blockbuster films that normally would be spaced out throughout the year and released first in cinemas. And this is the kind of model of the business or exhibition business that has been working for since beginning of time, also the beginning of the film industry. This is all being upended, and nobody knows how the future releases are going to play out.
Right.
The end result for the viewer is that some of the movies, they will be accessible as streaming, and some of them will be not. But the problem is obviously that we don't know which ones. There will be definitely a backlog, a glut of major films that there will be no room for them to be released unless they get put on the streaming. But this is not the ideal way of releasing major action films, for example, because they should be probably seen on the big screen, and a lot of people prefer to see it that way. So we'll see.
So have they been making films this year or just not?
Some movies have been made or finished or produced, not necessarily in the United States, but let's say in other countries. But obviously everything has been slowed down. I mean, some movies have already been, you know, they have been filmed, let's say, in New Zealand. There's a Tom Hanks movie that was being filmed in New Zealand or Australia, and he actually got COVID and recovered. But
I remember that.
They were already being filmed in a different country, so they were completed because they were not being filmed here. It is very, very hard. You know, some countries and some markets like Canada, for example, they managed to create a so-called bubble where you have the whole crew isolate completely during the shoot. That way they stay in that kind of immunological bubble, if you like. They complete the film and they don't have to shut down. Because, you know, shutting down a production of a normal film, not even a blockbuster, costs $200,000, $300,000 a day, at least.
Right.
That's just like a normal movie, not a major film with special effects and second unit and so on. So the industry is completely in disarray right now, completely upended, which is not good for the future of cinema, not good for the millions upon millions of people who actually live, you know, make their livelihood there. And for everybody who works in, let's say, in a film studio, there is a huge amount of people who work around it, who service the community that is involved in production. In other words, you know, schools and tailors and gas stations and grocery stores. Everybody who lives, for example, in Los Angeles, which is the industry town, is somehow connected to the film industry, even if they are just, you know, a dishwasher in a restaurant.
Right.
That restaurant will not survive if the people who work in production of movies or distribution of films don't have jobs.
Right.
So it's a domino effect, and Los Angeles is extremely affected by that. So this is just an example, and there are many other places in the world, you know, from London to Toronto, that are also affected by the same thing.
Right.
So we are just recommending for everybody to watch the old wonderful movies, because we don't know when the new ones are coming in.
Well, I think there's plenty to watch. I'm, as everyone can tell, I love movies. I watch lots of movies.
You certainly do.
And lots of documentaries. And there's still a tremendous amount that I'd love to watch that I haven't watched yet. So
we'll be doing movie lists as well.
Of course. Yes. Of course.
Well, Catherine, we really have wasted everybody's perfectly good hour of time.
Perfectly good hour.
And I wish you Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll reprise in a few weeks again. Thank you.
Okay. Nina Hine, thank you for a great year. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Merry Christmas. Goodbye.